Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Tony Football Show. Today, FA Cup third round. We bring you the best of the 31 matches so far, from Liverpool's win at the Emirates to George Ellacobe's Stones rolling on to Coventry for the most dramatic result with visitors from Oxford since Saltburn. We're also here from Timo Werner to Tottenham and dire transfer decisions for Bayern and more in this Totally Football Show. All right, listener, thank you so much for joining us. We're saying hello from the faraway world of Sunday, the 7th of January, the evening thereof, immediately post the action at the Emirates, where Liverpool were 2-0 winners over Arsenal. Watching that here alongside me were Tim Spears. Hi, Tim.
Hi, James.
And Tom Williams. All right, Tom.
Hello, James.
Wow, from his Nottinghamshire Eyrie, here's Daniel Storey. All right, Daniel.
Irie, how are you doing?
Nice. You went to a game this weekend, didn't you? You went to the Stag Do Derby, Baggies and Shots, West Brom.
Nice. Yeah. My ears are still ringing from Up the Shots, sang on repeat. Felt like my uni freshers week.
Yeah.
What tune do they sing that to?
Up the shots. I think it's quite.
Oh right, yeah. Nothing too right. Nothing too out there.
Okay, what did you watch, guys, of the 31 matches so far available? Tim
watched the majority of the TV games, with Newcastle Sunderland being the highlight for me. I think
was it?
Probably overtaken by what we've just seen. Actually,
yeah, the Liverpool win. Yeah.
But it's not been a classic weekend of FA Cup.
Some nice goals though.
Some nice storylines.
Yeah,
a couple of shocks.
Okay, yeah, one or two things in there, eh, Tom?
I watched Tottenham Hotspur 1, Burnley 0.
Nice.
Which kind of encapsulated the whole weekend, in that it was a very... I mean, I wouldn't say it was a very disappointing game, but it was quite a dreary game that was enlivened by a spectacular winning goal by Pedro Porro. Manchester City 5, Huddersfield 0, which was pretty much exactly the game you thought it was going to be. And Arsenal-Liverpool, which was a very engaging way to finish the weekend, albeit... Perhaps not if you're an Arsenal fan.
Perhaps not. Okay. 31 matches, as I say, so far. Among the headlines, well, lowest ranked team in the competition, Maidstone United, out of the sixth tier, but through to the fourth round after shocking Stevenage of League One, 1-0, with a Sam Corn penalty at the Gallagher Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the biggest giant killing of the round so far.
Mm-hmm.
Got the prized first slot on Match of the Day. On Saturday night, I felt a little bit bad for Sam Corn, the Maidstone goal scorer, because he had a wadge of tissue paper like wedged into one of his nostrils.
A little bit of cotton wool there,
A bit of cotton wool. Yeah. Obviously, you know, it had some kind of nosebleed. Mm. And, you know, that's probably the high point of his career. And I'm sure it doesn't take the edge off it at all.
I think it does.
But it's unfortunate. Imagine if Ronnie Radford had scored his famous goal with like a big bit of tissue paper sticking out of his nose. You'd be a bit, that's a shame. But probably, I mean, not worth flagging. But I think I flagged it all the same.
Details like that make Totally Football Show very much the essential companion to the FA Cup third round weekend. At Liverpool, we'll touch on that. We'll come on to that in depth. Holders Man City 5, 0 winners against Huddersfield. Very much in keeping with their recent results against the Terriers. 2 goals for Phil Foden. The big news, I guess, about that game was Kevin De Bruyne, with his new haircut, coming on for the first time since August and getting an assist within, I think, 17 minutes? 17 minutes,
And for Jeremy Doku, who was also making his return from
of course.
An injury-enforced absence.
All right. team enjoyed Saturday's We're Tyne derby, which turned out to be a spirited but relatively straightforward Newcastle 3-0 win over Sunderland. Elsewhere, Chelsea were 4-0 winners against Preston North End, all the goals coming in the second half. Brighton had a 4-2 win over Stoke. Villa ended their long third-round curse. They'd actually gone out at this point of the tournament in the last seven editions, but this time they beat Borough 1-0. Late on, Matty Cash deflected shot. Championship QPR, though, did maintain their proud record of suffering the most third-round eliminations of any club in FA Cup history. They were 2-0 up against Bournemouth, but ended up conceding three second-half goals to secure a 50-second exit at the third-round stage. Well done. No Premier League side, I noticed, got knocked out by a lower-tier opponent. Three got taken to replays. Luton, who were goalless with Bolton. Forest, who came back to draw 2-2 with Blackpool. And West Ham, who drew 1-1 with Bristol City. Tommy Conway's breakaway equaliser there, meaning that David Moyes will have a replay of that to enjoy. Others so good they'll play them twice. Games were Palace Everton from Thursday. A bit of controversy about Dominic Calvert-Lewin and the red card there. Perhaps we'll touch on that later. And Brentford Wolves. Oh, Birmingham Hull. That's also got to replay. Oh, also National League Eastleigh, who've earned themselves a replay away at League 2 Newport. Wow. Nuno Espirito Santo says ban replays, Tim.
Yeah, there's a bit of a growing narrative about that, isn't there, I think?
Is there?
I think so. Well, obviously, they've gone in the later rounds, and with it coinciding with the winter break this year, I think a lot. I mean, Thomas Frank said a draw against Wolves was the worst possible outcome. Mm. He would have rather have lost, basically. I don't know. I feel like there's still a place for them. Obviously, the financial rewards for lower league teams getting a replay against higher opposition. But for me, any tie that involves two teams from the same division should just not go to a replay. There's no interest there from anybody, is there really? So yeah, Nuno's call for them to go. I mean, one of my favourite football memories is from an FA Cup replay, so I would be hesitant to say ditch them.
Okay.
But yeah, I think there's a growing movement for them to be,
because it stuffs up their winter breaks. The clubs.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, can't go to Marbs if you've got a third round replay.
Indeed not. Indeed not.
Unless you renegotiate for it to be played in Marbs.
That's a thought.
Maybe that's the solution. Maybe that's the way to get the Premier League teams to swallow third round replays.
Mm. Okay.
Can Tim tell us his FA Cup replay?
Oh, it was Wolves v Sheffield Wednesday, 1995, February 95, fourth round replay. Famous, or well, not that famous, but well known for its incredible penalty shootout finish, which I've never seen before or since, as in the sequence. Mm. So Wolves missed their first three penalties and then scored their next four. Mm. Sheffield Wednesday scored their first three and then missed their next four.
Ooh.
Which we were talking about unique scorelines earlier. I think that's, yeah, so they won 4-3 in sudden death.
Okay.
And there were other narratives, like it was Chris Waddle's first penalty since Italia 90.
Ooh.
And Kevin Pressman scored one of the greatest penalties of all time. So there was a lot going on there.
Brilliant. And why couldn't we have that this weekend?
Why couldn't we?
Yeah. But that was very much about the penalties rather than it being a replay. I feel that had they just gone straight to penalties after the first game.
But, you know, replays are part of the lifeblood. Hashtag lifeblood of the competition.
But as Tim says, very much on the path to extinction. Sorry, Daniel.
I was going to say there is a fairly easy solution to this, which is that if both clubs agree that they don't want a replay, you don't have a replay. And if both clubs don't agree, which lower league clubs certainly wouldn't if they're playing clubs in a higher league, then you do have a replay. That seems the solution, I think. I mean,
common
it's a bit
sense.
Piecemeal, but it's a bit too common sense.
It's too sensible.
Yeah. All right. It was a good weekend for the city of Sheffield. Sheffield United 4-0 winners at Gillingham. That's their first away win in any competition this season. It featured their brand new signing, Ben Bertrand-Diaz, who came on for the last 20 minutes. Chris Wilder saying we had to make sure we did a job on Gillingham.
Of course he did.
Mm. Sheffield Wednesday, meanwhile, had a 4-0 win against Cardiff. A shout out to the Owls keeper, Cameron Dawson. Did you see this? Saving two penalties, two different penalties, in the space of 3 minutes.
I had it even better than watching it, which was I was listening to the radio, listening to Five Live and listening to another game. Therefore, they kept having to go to Hillsborough when anything happened. And you basically got no commentary of the first 10 minutes of the game I was going to be listening to because they kept having to go to Hillsborough for a goal and then a penalty save and then another penalty save all in the first 7 minutes, which was great.
Magnificent. All right. Oh, it's a bad weekend. Meanwhile, for Dreaming Spars and Gilded Halls of academia-based clubs, Cambridge United losing 5-2 to Blackburn Rovers with a first-half hat-trick from Sammy, I'm going to say Smodic. Would that be in any way correlatory to his... Yeah, okay. And Oxford United got beaten 6-2 against Coventry. Pick of the goals from that one?
Casey Palmer.
Casey Palmer.
And Palmer turns on the ball and races towards us, goes for a shot. Oh, what a goal from Casey Palmer!
Was that the goal of the round, do you feel?
No, absolutely not.
Not necessarily even top three.
Oh, really?
We've been spoiled.
Let's hear your top three.
Well, I mean, it would be more dramatic to do it in reverse order, but I don't know what that is, so I'm just going to start with number one.
Have a little think, Tim. Are you going to go reverse order on us?
I've only got one. There's only one in the conversation, isn't there?
Really?
Yeah.
Patrick Bamford.
The astonishing goal.
White trim, just one defeat at home for them all season in all competitions. That came against Derby back in August. Bamford chests it down. Oh! What a goal! What an unbelievable goal from Patrick Bamford!
Certainly the best goal scored by a classmate of Daniel Storey in the FA Cup this season.
Not a classmate. Sadly, same school, not same class.
Okay.
My greying beard.
Your move, Storey.
I would shout Morgan Gibbs-White, I would shout Casey Palmer, I'd shout Pedro Porro. But no, it has to be Marco van Bamford for that.
It was more Bamers Rodriguez, I would say, than Van Basten.
Yeah.
Do you not think the World Cup...
Or even Tony Bamford.
Oh.
With going far, far too niche, it reminded me of a goal that scored probably the greatest goal in the championship history, which is scored by Joe Garner for Preston, where he lifts the ball over a defender and then volleys it across goal. It's an astonishing goal, Bamford. And for a player who has been basically pilloried by Leeds fans for most of the last 18 months, the weird accusation is that he can't hack it, so he can only score goals in empty stadiums in the Premier League, which feels a bit uncharitable. And then a kind of reminder that even just very good footballers are capable of absolutely incredible things that they pull off in training all the time, but very rarely in games.
Oh my! I've just seen that Joe Garner goal. That's incredible.
Yeah.
The title of the YouTube video is the best goal ever scored. I uploaded it.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So okay, hang on a second. I've got to go around and have a look at this.
Garner. Oh, he's done superbly. He's done magnificently. That is astonishing.
Oh, yes.
It's...
With a little additional touch.
Because he chests it and then does a touch and then...
And then hits.
Well, it's certainly a good one, Tim. I'm not denying that.
Was Bamford's goal better than Alejandro Garnacho's goal? That's the question.
I don't know. I'm not sure if we can say...
Because there was the very quickly goal of the season contender talk and Puskas Award talk.
Right.
After the Bamford goal.
Yeah.
Did the rounds on social media. But I kind of feel like Garnacho's already got goal of the season nailed. People do like an overhead bicycle kick. Mm. Controversially, I can kind of take them or leave them, but people do like them a lot.
I prefer this one.
I kind of prefer this one.
Yeah, there's more moving parts to it, which is a mad thing to say against a goal that has a man with his feet above his head.
Yeah, and I think there's an impudence to this. I can just about fathom seeing a ball flying in at that kind of height and thinking I'm going to have to fall over and fling my foot at this. But to chest and then think, I'll just spin and volley this, especially when you've got the kind of track record that Patrick Bamford's got. Anyway, there you go. Part of a 3-0 win for Leeds over Peterborough, which sees them through to the fourth round, where they'll also be joined by Wrexham, who beat Shrewsbury 1-0. Oh, Daniel, you went to West Brom Aldershot. We mentioned that, and that turned out 4-1 for the Baggies. Liverpool
one? Yeah, I had the option of doing a preview of one and going to another in terms of big shock potential. And I did the preview of Maidstone and went to the Hawthorns, which turns out to have been a bad decision. But yeah, it was a very, very routine win. There were 5,000 Aldershot fans there, though, which was great. And they probably made up about a third of the attendance at the Hawthorns. My big bugbear this weekend is, when will Championship clubs learn that you should just give season ticket holders the first round of cup competitions free with their season ticket, so that the ground is not half, or the home end is not half empty for a really good game? Shout out to Tom Fellows, a 20-year-old winger, only started twice in the Championship, and he was by a mile the best player on the pitch. So he is a one to watch.
Very good. Also, in among the games already played, you had Ipswich beating AFC Wimbledon 3-1, but lots of stuff happened. Let me just say, to round this chunk off, that the draw for the fourth round will be happening just before the 32nd game of the round, which is Man United at Wigan on Monday night. Daniel, you did the preview for Maidstone's clash with Stevenage. Can you offer some perspective on just what Saturday's 1-0 victory represents for that club?
Yeah, so this club's first appearance in the FA Cup third round, but Maidstone have been in the third round before, but in 1992 went out of business just as the Premier League formed. They went out of business because they got promoted to the Football League, couldn't use the ground, debts eventually spiralled, someone threatened to take them to the northeast of England and move the club, weren't allowed, and eventually they went bankrupt. And ever since then, they started in the fourth tier of Kent football, so they were demoted about 10 divisions.
That's 10 division. No, I'm just curious. It's the fourth tier of Kent football. That's 10th yes. tier, is it, you think?
So, yeah, they basically had three promotions to get to the Isthmian League system. So it's a huge drop. They took over a youth club, effectively, and then changed their name to Maidstone United and worked their way back. And they've still not got back to the Football League. They've been in the National League a couple of times. But I mean, in purely monetary terms, they've earned $125,000 prize money before Saturday. I think they've doubled it after Saturday.
What's that represent? I always like a comparison with their annual budget.
Exactly.
Build a new clubhouse. What?
It was very much that. Well, they've actually got a newish stadium. They moved into the Gallagher Stadium in 2012. It took them 24 years, I think, to get home. Having
24
left
years
Maidstone,
without a ground?
Without playing football in Maidstone, yeah. Mm. And yeah, their manager is the incredibly affable and friendly George Ellacobe. They've got Craig Fagan, who I spoke to last week. He's their assistant manager. He was at Hull when they're in the Premier League. And there was a great quote from Ellacobe that Tim, I'm sure, will have seen and enjoyed, because he's a bit of a Wolves legend. And they said, oh, who do you want in the fourth round? And everyone was expecting him to say a kind of Man City or Chelsea or whoever. And he said, yeah, I want to take my babies home to Wolves. I want to play at the Golden Palace.
Golden Palace.
So he is ready for... Yeah, if you can fix a draw, we shouldn't. But if you can, let's have Wolves Maidstone.
Has anyone ever referred to Wolves as the Golden Palace before?
Yeah, it's the nickname for the stadium.
Right.
Although my friends use it as a stick to beat me with, because they say it sounds like a Chinese restaurant.
I mean, it does.
It does. So I don't use it.
I'm going to the Golden Palace tonight.
Yeah,
my hopes are already soaring, and then it turns out. Oh well. Okay. Hey, let's get on to a little bit more of a in-depth look at what happened at the Emirates Sunday afternoon next.
For most of us, January means New Year's resolutions. But for the footballing world, January means one thing. Transfers. The window is back open, and that sound you can hear is managers frantically compiling their wish lists and agents tapping on their phones trying to get a good deal, while the rest of us wait for the next David Ornstein newsflash. There's a lot going on, and to stay on top of every move that matters, you need the Athletic Football Podcast.
They were prioritising somebody like Mason Mount, Ilkay Gundogan was in the mix.
5 days a week, we'll help you cut through the noise with the most reliable reporters in the industry. David Ornstein, Adam Crafton, Laurie Whitwell, and many more will not only tell you what the deal is, but how it happened too. So make sure you don't miss a single transfer beat in January with the Athletic Football Podcast. Listen for free wherever you get your shows, and hit follow and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Look at the purple shirts now, and it's Luis Diaz, and he sealed it by smashing the ball into the roof of the Arsenal net.
Arsenal-Liverpool, 2-0 for Jurgen Klopp's side. After a first half which saw Arsenal absolutely dominating. What was the shot count? Was it 13 shots and 5 on target, I think, in the game overall? But most of those coming in the first half, most of them falling to Kai Havertz with, you know, predictable consequences. But with about 10 minutes to go, it was Liverpool that took the lead through an Arsenal own goal. Jakub Kiwior glancing in Trent Alexander-Arnold's free kick. And then with Arsenal chasing an equaliser, Liverpool break downfield. And Luis Diaz shows them how you finish a goal-scoring opportunity, because they do need telling. What was it that Jurgen Klopp did to turn that game around that the pundits were raving about?
Well, I mean, I think we should probably underline the fact that Liverpool were missing an awful lot of first-team players, you know, at kick-off. Obviously, no Mo Salah, Virgil van Dijk wasn't there, no Endo, no Dominic Szoboszlai, etc. Yeah, Liverpool started with Gakpo in the midfield three and Harvey Elliott filling in for Mo Salah on the right. And at half time, Klopp moved Elliott into midfield, put Gakpo through the middle as a kind of false nine. Darwin Nunez went out to the left. Luis Diaz switched over to the right. And it seemed to give Liverpool more of a platform in midfield. And as a consequence, you know, they started attacking down the flanks a bit more deliberately, using the pace of Nunez and the pace of Diaz. And Nunez had a classic Darwin Nunez game where he's just constantly picking up the ball in good positions, getting into good shooting positions, and then either making the wrong decision or, you know, not making good contact. But, you know, ran his heart out, as did Diaz, and Diaz gets his reward right at the end with a really well-taken goal. And yeah, fantastic result for Liverpool. And for Arsenal, just, I mean, yeah, sort of Groundhog Day. Completely bossed the game, particularly in the first half. And Mikel Arteta sort of, you know, had mixed things up for once. Kai Havertz playing through the middle up front for the first time since, I think, the Community Shield. Rhys Nelson starting on the left to give Gabriel Martinelli a breather. And created loads of chances. But again, just no cutting edge whatsoever. And once again, it's cost them dearly.
Yeah. Arsenal now 112 shots in their last 6 matches, 4 goals scored. Poor old Kai Havertz. At least he'll always have that Champions League winning goal, eh, Tom?
Yes, he will. Well, this, James, is a reference to the fact that I had suggested pre-pod that the circumstances of that winning goal in the 2021 Champions League final were actually slightly fortuitous, in that, if you'll recall, it came from Havertz running onto a Mason Mount through ball and then rounding Ederson and rolling the ball into the empty net. If you watch a replay, you'll see that had Ederson not got a touch on the ball after Havertz's first touch, the ball could well have sped out for a goal kick. And it was another, you know, I mean, on that occasion, obviously, he got the rub of the green, as they say, and tucked in the winning goal. But against Liverpool,
Ederson,
it was
the
kind of
thing out of a wild touch, essentially.
But it was sort of like knock-kneed, tripping over his own feet, Havertz again at the Emirates today. And, you know, that was a big factor in Arsenal failing to score.
Yeah, a rough Christmas period for the Gunners, continuing into the new year. That's arguably two different trophy competitions that they might now be, well, one certainly, and the other one's not looking great after the Premier League results over Christmas, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it was the same old story, missing chances and losing 2-0 at home like they did against West Ham last week. But, you know, the accusation is that Arsenal have been quite boring to watch and, you know, trying to control games and take the fun out of them. But this was different. This was, you know, they should have been 5-0 up at half-time, really. But yeah,
Liverpool's defending part of the credit for that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But in terms of, again, highlighted Arsenal's lack of match winners, I think. That's a real problem for them at the moment. And it feels like, you know, for a club that's all about sort of prides itself on long-term planning and building for the future, they're now sort of relying on January, it feels like, to save their season. I don't know. There's distinct lack of goal scorers and match winners along that front line, and it feels like January's going to be there anyway.
Strange, because it didn't feel that way. I know there was always that centre-forward question, but it didn't feel that way not so long ago when they were putting, what, 6 or 7 past Lens in the Champions League. I think it was 6. Daniel, what was your take on Sunday at the Emirates?
I wonder with the Havertz thing, it does feel deliberate that Arteta has not tried him as a centre-forward since the Community Shield. He was very insistent that Havertz was this kind of progressive number 8, and therefore it felt like playing him as a centre-forward was almost an admission of weakness in that, OK, we'll try the thing that everyone assumed he was when we bought him that hadn't worked before. I know this is a cup game, and so there was an element of rotation, but it feels like the last plan for that centre-forward line. And Nketiah stayed on the bench till 81 minutes. He is a striker, but clearly either isn't trusted or maybe will move at some point. Gabriel Jesus wasn't there, we're told, because of another knee injury. It just doesn't feel like you can trust him to start 2 months in the team and remain fit for the entirety of that 2 months. So it was basically the ultimate admission of, OK, yeah, this was our last shot. It still didn't work. Havertz missed chances he should have taken. He doesn't really have an argument for not asking for a striker now. I don't know if he deserves one, given that they spent 200 million in the summer and didn't buy one. But and that sounds like that was at least partly his decision. But yeah, this season is careering off the tracks if they continue to either... The two extremes are they either don't create chances because they're boring and look solid, or they do create chances, miss them, and therefore look weaker at the back as a result. And neither of those are particularly appetising.
No, indeed not. What about Liverpool then, who've got a League Cup semi-final coming up against Fulham at Anfield on Wednesday? Loads of positives, as Tom was suggesting, on a potentially tricky afternoon for Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, I mean, on the TV, Ibrahim Konate got man of the match, and I think that's absolutely fair enough. But a huge shout out to Conor Bradley, who was the game's best player after he came on. I thought when that Martinelli change happened and he immediately rinsed Trent twice and could have set up one goal in that time, I thought that was going to be the game because they were looking for that massive switch over to Martinelli to run at the defender. And Klopp effectively brought on another player to play at right back and just sort of said to Trent, you just float around a bit in that position. And Bradley was brilliant at stopping Martinelli. That changed the game because Trent was then able to push forward, play the passes without worrying about Martinelli running in behind him. And I thought just that tweak was almost as effective as the half-time switches around. Bradley was, I've not seen much of Bradley. I know they said he was Bolton's player of the year last year, but he looked really, really solid at right back.
Does anybody know? Tim, do you know anything more about Conor Bradley?
No, I don't know very much about him, but I agree. He was very impressive. They're just finding a way to win almost every game they're playing at the moment. I think they've lost one domestic game all season now.
That's correct. They've lost two in the Europa League, and the one in the Premier League being the oh-so-controversial Spurs game.
Yeah, of course, when they were down to 9 men. I think it's important to highlight the way that Jurgen Klopp engineered this victory with his changes, we mentioned tactically, and then Jota was fantastic as well when he came on. A few months ago, there was a thought that Klopp might be tired or on the way out of Liverpool and reaching the end of a cycle, and you know, can he go again? And you've got to say he looks completely reinvigorated right now, and that's having a massive impact on their remarkable run of form.
Indeed,
and they do this so often. Liverpool, you know, get battered. Or play quite badly and manage to find a way to win. And what has happened very often this season has been that it's been to Mo Salah that they've looked, and he's been the difference. And obviously he wasn't there today and he won't be around for a few weeks because of the Africa Cup of Nations. But, you know, and again, in spite of all the other absentees, they managed to, you know, pull off the same feat against Arsenal.
Magnificent. That's Liverpool through then. And Manchester City, the holders, also in the fourth round. Tom, you watched their performance for 90 minutes. I'm sure there were lots of exciting things to tell us about from that.
Yeah, I mean, it was the sort of classic City against lower leagues opposition game in a cup competition sort of match, and also a classic sort of Manchester City versus Huddersfield game because, you know, when their paths were crossing in the Premier League, they seemed to score about 5 or 6 goals past them every time. Phil Foden was really good and sort of stuck out in the sense that Huddersfield, you know, dropped back and basically had every man behind the ball, and City were just sort of stringing passes around in front of the Huddersfield penalty area. And the only player who seemed to be constantly trying to propose, you know, different passing solutions and different angles in terms of his, you know, the runs he was making in his body position was Foden. He scored the first goal. He scored the fourth goal, which was beautifully created after a short corner on the Man City right. And he's been, you know, the last few weeks playing in that number 10 position that we've, you know, occasionally heard he is incapable of playing in. And as it turns out, you know, there are circumstances where he can play there and plays very well. But I think that the main sort of takeaway for City was both De Bruyne being back and Doku being back. And I suspect that De Bruyne being back will probably put the kibosh on Foden, you know, having any aspirations to keeping hold of that position in the team. Although Guardiola, again, after the game, spoke about the importance of easing De Bruyne back in. Obviously, he's been out since August through injury. So I don't think he's necessarily going to come straight back into the starting 11. But yeah, a sort of classic City Cup performance. And, you know, De Bruyne and Doku being back and Haaland being on the verge of returning as well, there that kind of ominous feeling we've all had about City over the last few weeks as, you know, a lot of their rivals in the Premier League have started to falter is only growing as they get, you know, all of these key players back.
Indeed. They've got Newcastle, who are minus a player or two. We'll talk about the Sunderland game a little bit later on. They've got them next Saturday and then their winter break, which sees them off until the 31st of January when they welcome Burnley. Burnley to the Etihad. Very good. Next up, have a bit of a chat about that Timo Werner to Tottenham business.
Now then, if your New Year's resolution for 2024 is to find the best Spurs podcast on the planet, then boy, do I have a treat for you. I'm Danny Kelly, host of The View from the Lane, The Athletic's dedicated and award-winning Spurs podcast. Twice a week, I'm joined by Charlie Eccleshare, Jack Pitbrook and James Moore as they bring you everything you need to know from in and around the club. You won't get it anywhere else. Listen free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and all the usual places, and make sure to hit follow and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. The View from the Lane, people.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
Totally. You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Totally Football Show European Edition is out on Tuesday. Of course, we're going to talk about Napoli's latest meltdown and other things too. And in France, the extraordinary Coupe de France, which saw Golden Lion of Martinique. Not sure what kind of restaurant they sound like. Maybe a pub, probably.
More a pub. A grim expat pub.
Oh, yeah. They travelled 8,000 miles there and back to go to Lille in the Coupe de France. How'd it go, Tom?
12-goal thriller. In the sense that it finished Lille 12, Golden Lion 0.
Right.
The Coupe de France also featured this weekend one of the worst Panenka penalties ever taken.
Can confirm.
Which was the erve of a certain Antoine Mille playing for Châteauroux. And their game went to a penalty shootout against Les Herbiers, who reached the Coupe de France final in 2018, I think it was. And he took a Panenka that was so bad, it bounced before it reached the goal.
Mm. And the goalie walked out.
Was able to walk out, pick it up, and then ran up right up into Antoine Mille's grill to rub it in. Because they really don't like being Panenka, do they, goalkeepers? So, bit of revenge for the goalies there.
Mm. More on that on Tuesday's Totally Football Show European Edition. On Tuesday, there'll also be a brand new Full-Time Europe, the Athletic's women's football podcast, which will have, I'm sure, a lot to talk about the implications of that terrible injury to Chelsea's Sam Kerr. What that means. Footballer of the Year, of course, who's now done her ACL. And why that keeps happening in the women's game as well. Spurs. 1-0 winners over Burnley on Friday night. Tom, I think you watched this. Was that right? Was it Tim? Tim, you watched this?
I think we both did.
Did you both watch it?
Yeah.
Quite the goal from Pedro Porro, as we've mentioned. But the big news, I feel, coming out of N17 of late is Spurs' audacious loan signing of Timo Werner from RB Leipzig. Not sure if this is officially confirmed. But I don't care. I'm too excited because this is the kind of January move that really sets the imagination alight. Hey, Daniel, it couldn't work, could it?
Well, yeah. I mean, on paper and on logic, it is a team that Heung-min Son aside struggles to finish their chances and score goals. Signing a striker who we already know in the Premier League struggles to finish chances and score goals, but looks very busy, which is also a kind of, you sort of amalgam all of Spurs' other forwards other than Son and basically get Timo Werner.
DNA.
So maybe it is a kind of, Spurs DNA. Look, he's, the positive spin is that he needs the move. He's not really done much at Leipzig this season at all. And he's a kind of free hit, I suppose, and Son's not there, so he's a body. And I guess he's hardworking and pressing, and Ange Postecoglou will like both of those things. But that it feels like one of those things that if you said it to a Spurs fan last week, they'd be like, that sounds awful. And then when it actually happens, they say, well, you know, it could, there is some logic to it. It could work. You never know, which is probably exactly what Tim is about to do.
Probably about the same way that Arsenal fans talked about when they got Kai Havertz out of Chelsea. He'd also been brilliant back in the day at Leipzig some of the time alongside Timo Werner. Tim, make the case for Timo.
I mean, I guess they're getting a motivated player. He's dropped out of the Germany squad. The Euros is coming up. He could do with a good run of form. He will get minutes. He will get, you know, with Son being away till possibly mid-February, there's a big chunk of games coming up. And Spurs, yeah, do really lack quality alternatives along that front line. They've been playing Valise and Brian Hill have been coming off the bench recently. Just not up to the standard of those players that they're replacing. The option fee is remarkable, I think, and really shows how his reputation has suffered.
How much is it?
Reports of between 15 and 20 million for a player who cost 47 million when Chelsea purchased him not too long ago. And there's obviously a reason.
Isn't it? Judging Chelsea transfer fees as a, that's not necessarily.
No, but you know, for a guy who's got a record of almost 1-2 for Germany and had obviously a couple of excellent seasons with Leipzig, yeah, there's a reason he's values halved because he stopped scoring goals a little while ago. You know, if they get the Chelsea Werner, then he'll just be a backup option. He'll make no impact and leave quietly in the summer. But what I would say is Postecoglou has a recent and good track record of improving players and improving their confidence. And we've seen Richarlison have a real upturn recently, and we'll see how that goes. But players like Porro, markedly different to last season, Bissouma. So if Ange does his thing, then you never know. But I doubt it.
But if he's better than he was at Chelsea, Spurs fans will love him. They'll see that as great banter. So, you know.
All right. Also this weekend, the letters WT and F coming in for industrial usage across the land, with news that Eric Dier's on his way to Bayern. Daniel Schofield tweeting, Harry wants somebody to play Hungry Hippos with. Is that fair? Is there a... I mean, motivation enough, I would say, but I know Bayern are light at the back.
Yeah, and he will not be tested, I suppose, in the same way. There was a very good central defender in Eric Dier. It was quite a long time ago. It was probably 2018, 2019. There was a very good defender in there. He definitely needs a move. There's no doubt about that. The obvious example of you being upbeat about this is Chris Smalling, who was given fairly short shrift by fans in England and fans of the England team, and hasn't managed to break back into the England squad, but is having a lovely old time in Italy. Certainly compared to his time or last 6 to 8 to 12 to 18 to 24 months in England, Dier will be after the same. It's very much a kind of career renaissance move. And again, it's, as with Werner, I suppose it's a kind of shot to nothing. If it doesn't work out, it's not going to be a hugely expensive move. The Kane factor is obviously a thing. They're pretty good mates. That seems a fairly good way of keeping Harry settled as well. And if that's all it ends up being, then maybe that's worth it. But yeah, he certainly needs that career reboot. It's pretty telling that, you know, I know Postecoglou was pretty angry about suggestions that he was being left out because he's moving, but he's been left out for all sorts of reasons over the last year under three different managers. So it's not going to happen for him at Spurs. It's a pinch yourself move for him. And yeah, kind of good luck to him. You know, he has remained pretty professional. He's not thrown his toys out the pram. He's clearly going through a bad time of it. But, you know, look across at England's defensive partners and Harry Maguire quickly turned it around. So why can't he, I guess?
Very nice.
And this potential transfer has yielded what is unquestionably the most brutal one-word quote of the entire season, in that Ange Postecoglou was asked after the Burnley game whether, in light of Ben Davies potentially being injured, he could afford to lose Eric Dier. Postecoglou just replied, yes.
There you are. Possibly heading in the opposite direction in terms of coming into the Premier League or back to the Premier League, Jordan Henderson, according to reports, after his move. How long ago was that? 6 months ago? Was it 6 months?
Yeah.
Ago that he moved to Al Ettifaq.
Solved it, hasn't he?
Yeah. That quickly. He's changed attitudes in Saudi Arabia. There's nothing left for him to achieve there.
Things not going well for Al Ettifaq. No wins in eight. Attendance is down. Daniel?
No, but as a positive spin, they are getting rid of Jordan Henderson's wages, so it's not all bad.
There you are. Who do you think might want him? Who do you think he'll find a home in the Premier League?
If
who can afford him if he's going to take an almighty wage cut?
It smacks of Nottingham Forest, if I'm brutally honest. But, I mean, maybe Fulham, if João Palhinha goes to Bayern, would that be a potential option for him? I don't think he can be choosy. I don't think there will be many takers. But Fulham seems like... I mean, Fulham or Crystal Palace, maybe. Someone that's slightly struggling that maybe needs a body in. Needs a lot of pointing done. Yeah, I just don't get it. And I feel like the news has clearly leaked from his side, I think it's fair to say. He's clearly pretty disillusioned with how the move has gone. I cannot believe he didn't predict some of those problems. You know, there's kind of, one of the reports I read sort of said that it's very humid and hot, and I thought, yeah, it'll do that out there. But I don't know. I mean, he like Werner, probably sees himself dropping lower in that England pecking order and thinks, well, I've got to try something. I'm sure a Premier League club will take it, but it would be a foolish move, I think, given the probable wages. But yeah, I hope I'm wrong that it's Max of Forest. That's me being flippant. I don't think he'll go there. But yeah, I don't really see where there's an obvious fit unless it's an MLS move or something like that.
All right. Well, it's an exciting time, the transfer window. Back to, though, the weekend's FA Cup action. And some of the other stories that we should be touching on, of course, the Weir Tyne Derby. Of course, what happened with West Ham. But maybe there's another match that you guys would like to bring up at this point before we finish off our third round coverage.
Yeah, the only thing that stands out, and this is from the highlights rather than from having watched the game, but I thought... Chesterfield looked excellent against Watford. Seemed to knock the ball around really, really nicely. Loads of one-touch passing and third-man runs. Were 1-0 up at Watford with 50 minutes remaining and then let two in late on. Chesterfield, obviously, club with FA Cup pedigree, 1997 and all that. The 3-3 draw against Janino's Middlesbrough at Old Trafford. But yeah, played some lovely stuff and you know, it seemed that they could count themselves unlucky not to have got at least a replay there.
Right, the Spireites.
The Spireites.
Spireites.
We should also point out, you know, Wrexham beating Shrewsbury away, league above. But also, this is one of the lesser-known derbies. It's hail from not too far from that part of the world. It's ferocious.
Right.
The cross-border derby. There aren't too many clubs around there, so they're 30 miles apart. But they've not played each other since 2008, I think it was. So there's a packed house at Shrewsbury, you know, their biggest game of the season. And, yeah, Wrexham go and win it with a dodgy, deflected late winner.
Was that what it was, Tim?
It was. Mm. And, they'll be an interesting name in Monday night's draw, for sure.
Mm, indeed so. All right, as will Chelsea, who had that 4-0 win over Preston North End, who are currently 14th in the Championship. Breuer among the scorers?
Yeah, goals for players who, you know, were in need of goals. So Armando Breuer, who I think has looked, you know, pretty useful, having started a couple of games of late without getting any reward. And Enzo Fernandez as well, who got a goal late on, who has been kind of in and out of the team of late.
Well done to Mauricio Pochettino's Chelsea. De Zerbi's Brighton got a bit of a scare away at Stoke. Ran out 4-2 winners over the Potters. Pascal Gross with a hat-trick of assists. Very nice.
And another long-range banger from Purvis Estupiñan.
Oh, yeah.
He was fit again and back in the team.
Very nice. And then there was the big game Saturday lunchtime at the Stadium of Light. Daniel, Newcastle, a 3-0 win.
Yeah, and they were miles, miles better than Sunderland. I know there was a kind of sort of haunting feeling when that draw was made amongst Newcastle fans and possibly by Eddie Howe as well, because they'd lost six in a row to Sunderland. It was much easier not playing them than playing them, but the gap was chasmic. It was enormous. I was really disappointed with Sunderland, actually. I know Michael Beale likes to sort of play out from the back, and I get that that's his philosophy, but you watch that game and my overwhelming feeling was Tony Mowbray's Sunderland would have given these a much better game than Michael Beale's Sunderland did, because they made mistakes. They didn't touch Newcastle because they just kept the ball in their own half. And what that sort of game needs is the underdog to play with a real intensity and, you know, go direct, make challenges, cause problems. And they didn't do any of that. They just played it as if it was like a, you know, a league game against a better team, and they got battered. And, you know, I don't get Michael Beale at all. I don't get that appointment at all. I don't think it'll work out. And it just feels like such an opportunity miss, because by half time, I know it was only 1-0 at half time, but the game was, I mean, Newcastle should have been 3 or 4 clear by half time if Sean Longstaff could shoot from the edge of the box. And I was really disappointed with Sunderland, which seems a really harsh thing to say about a team coming up against, you know, the team with the richest owners in world football. And I get that, but there are ways of approaching those games, and I thought they got it completely wrong. Mm.
The game did peter out, but as an occasion, pre-match and first 20 minutes, it was glorious. There's such a purity to the hatred in that stadium. Like, in terms of, you know, I went to Man City, Man United last year, and there were half and half scarves, and the percentage of sort of hatred amongst the fans for one another is very high, and that was reflected in the way the game was played. It was a real old school relic. Tackles flying in, players leaving boots and elbows and everywhere. There was no VAR. It was great. It was quite glorious. It's kind of like watching sort of UK Gold for a couple of hours. It's very old school.
Yeah, it's a bullseye version of a football game. The best bit for me was pre-game. There was a video of that went kind of viral on Twitter, of a Sunderland fan or a few Sunderland fans screaming abuse at Newcastle fans as they sort of walked up from the coaches. And, you know, to cut a long story short, every Newcastle fan had to go on an official coach. It was a bubble match. And one of the guys screaming abuse, someone managed to find a still, and you can tell from the still he's got his phone out and he's FaceTiming his mum while screaming abuse at these Newcastle fans. I thought, that's pretty much the time we're derby for you.
How can you tell he's FaceTiming his mum?
Well, he's just got his, like, you can see his mum on this. Well, I assume it's his mum, on the screen, and she's just like laughing really hard. And you've watched the video up until that point, so you know the words he's been saying, right, and screaming in the face of Newcastle fans. It is absolutely glorious. That is what derby matches are all about.
And that's the magic of the cup. Newcastle leaving the Stadium of Light with Joe Linton now on their injury list as well. And one thing we should add, if you're still there, listener, is that one or two injuries that could have a bit of a bearing on the way that the season progresses over the next few weeks for other clubs. West Ham spring to mind. Not only do they have to face a replay with Bristol City away at Ashton Gate, but Paquetá, who's been kind of the inspiration to so much, many of the good things that the Hammers have been up to, came back from injury and then promptly went out injured again.
Yeah, he set up the opening goal and then promptly went off injured a few minutes later. Not a great day for West Ham. They selected a pretty strong team, but by all accounts were quite woeful. And yeah, as well as Paquetá, Bowen picked up an injury as well, which is quite worrying, and Mavropanos.
Oh.
So, and they're, yeah, another team that loses a winter break with a replay, so not a good day for West Ham.
And Mohamed Kudus is at the Africa Cup of Nations. Ooh. Just to really pile on the misery for any West Ham fans who are listening.
Yikes.
West Ham loaned out Tiro Kehrer to Monaco last week with an option to buy, which, you know, he wasn't getting in the team, so fair enough. But then when you then play a game and Mavropanos gets injured that day, it does make you think now there's suddenly not as many options at the back, which, yeah, I wonder if David Moyes, if he had his time back, maybe would have kept hold of Kehrer for a while.
All right, well, we'll be talking more about the Hammers and all the kind of Premier League picture when we return with the Stony Football Show on Thursday. Tuesday, it'll be the turn of the Euro crew as they break down what's been happening in the various Continental Cups. Ooh. So do look out for that. For now, that brings us to the end of this Totally Football Show. So many thanks to Daniel Story, to Tom Williams, and to Tim Spears, as well as Liam and producer Charlie in the booth. You, listener, deserve our eternal gratitude too. So many thanks for being part of it, and we'll catch up with you soon.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for the Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.